sack. Is that all you get for your money? And if that's what you have in mind, yeah, if that's what you're all about, good luck moving up, 'cause I'm moving out.
Good morning and welcome to Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move. This is Mark Carr, team member of the Becky Ivins Real Estate Team, and I'm sitting here with Becky Ivins herself talking about real estate. How are you doing this morning?
Well, good morning, Mark. I am doing great. It's a crisp morning and getting my second vaccine today.
That's exciting, isn't it?
Well, I don't know. I've still got the bruise from the last one 4 weeks ago, so we'll see how that goes.
So I had my first dose, I guess, about last week. So this next week I'll get the second one.
So you must have Pfizer.
I do.
Oh, okay. Yep. So yep. 3 weeks apart.
Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
So we're here today with Ron Shalott. And Ron, I depend on him a great deal. He is my personal and my corporate attorney. And we just, it's nice to have someone who actually knows the law. We'll research it when required and guides me in the right direction, because we like to ward off any adverse law situations as opposed to reacting to them.
Always better to be preemptive when it comes to the law. Now, this is kind of part two of our talk with Ron over the Landlord-Tenant Act. And if you would like to go back and listen to part one last week, you can go to BeckyIvins.com, click on radio, and you'll see podcast there. And you can click on podcast, and you can go back and listen to last week's that we dealt with the tenant part of the Landlord-Tenant Act. And then, anywhere you subscribe to podcast, iTunes, all of that good stuff, you can just Google Becky Ivins, and it'll pop up.
Becky Ivins Real Estate.
That's it.
That's what helps.
So we're here with Ron Shalott talking about landlord side of the Landlord-Tenant Act. I love the name landlord. Like, love that's just a great, like, there's something about it. If you pause,
you would be good
landlord
in England at the turn of the last century, right?
We're getting into our word of the day.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. I love it. I love it.
A preview of what's coming up. Yeah, the weather is foggy outside. We can't see much out this window, and sometimes the law seems foggy. So the concept here is to try to come in and clarify a few things.
As I was reading through this again this last week, Ron, there's parts of it that it's foggy. It's a little bit of like who determines what in this. So I'm really looking forward to you giving us some clarity here. And if you would like to call in and ask a question and be a part of the show, you can call in at 405-840-1000. That's 840-1000. We'd love for you to call in.
What does the Landlord-Tenant Act not cover, Ron?
It covers a lot of things, but it also does not cover a lot of things as well. There's a lot of specifics it doesn't cover. It covers a lot of the necessities and the basics. It's a framework. But with the tenant side that we talked about last week, and perhaps a little bit of review, a couple of things I said last week were, one, get the lease in writing, the rental agreement, if you're going to be a tenant, and two, read it. Not surprisingly, if you're a landlord, my suggestion would be to, one, get it in writing, and two, read it.
Right.
You'd be surprised how many people who are landlords, and usually they'll own like a house and rent a house, will come to me and say, okay, this is the lease. And I say, okay, where did you get this lease? And it was either, well, I bought it at an office supply store, or I had one bought at a garage sale for $1, or I got it from a friend, or I found it online. Have you ever read it? Well, kind of, and I'm not really sure what's in it. So can you tell me what's in it and how does it apply to this situation that they come to see me about? And that gets to be a little frightening, that people do not read the contracts they enter into, especially when you're talking about people's lives, and they are going to be living in these conditions. And again, we're talking about residential, not commercial. Commercial is a whole different thing, but the Residential Landlord Act covers residences, not hotel, motel, not college dorms, things of that nature. But we are renting, whether it's a multifamily or a single-family residence. So from the landlord side, the first thing is get in writing, because that's the only way that you can later on determine who is to do what. But the second thing is to read it. Seems simple, but very important.
Well, and does it cover like Airbnb?
Well, there you're getting into a whole different class, and there are statutes now being created by different states that will take care of those kind of short-term overnight rentals.
Which really don't fall into under the Landlord-Tenant Act.
Well, it can fall into a different aspect in the sense of you're looking at then an innkeeper situation, and there's an innkeeper statute, so you do have those kind of requirements. But there you're usually working through a company, and they will have some type of arrangement already through that company, through a national organization. I've not ever rented through one, so I've never really seen one and don't really care to do that. But when you're looking at this, we're just talking about someone who is going to actually be living there, not just staying there short-term, but actually living there, moving in.
And then addressing again what's not covered, how about a nursing home?
Well, a nursing home is a whole different situation.
Uh-huh.
So you're getting into a care facility, and consequently you're running into a whole different kind of scheme, whole different kind of a situation. Here we are just talking about the individuals who are, and today we're talking about the individuals who perhaps own real property, own a house, or maybe a duplex, or maybe a quadplex, and renting out to other individuals. So you do have to look at the law and then compartmentalize into the different areas, because that's the way the law is written. It's written into certain kind of situations. And so you can't apply this, for example, to someone who's in a county jail. It doesn't apply to that. Does not apply to that.
Okay.
So there are situations where it isn't meant to apply, and it's limited to the kind of situations it does apply to. And if you ever try to draft rules, that's the difficulty the legislature has, is trying to draft rules, we then call them laws, that will cover a whole variety of situations, specifically enough to give a direction, but not too specific that you will leave out certain things. For example, if you just say the landlord is responsible to take care of the faucets, and that's what the law says. That's not what it says, but that's what it says. Then the question is, well what about the commode? What about the shower? Those aren't faucets. And so you use a much broader term, plumbing and plumbing fixtures. But then you get into the situation of, well, what happens if the tenant takes a baseball bat to the commode because they're unhappy with the way it looks and destroys it? What do you do as a landlord at that particular situation?
So there's a lot to cover here, and we're going to go over the obligations of the landlord. I think that's going to people with this last snowstorm and busted pipes and things like that, and maybe a heater went out. And what is the landlord obligated to do when they own rental property, right?
That's right. And are they obligated to come shovel your driveway? And we'll come back with all those questions and more on this on Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move, News Radio 1000, KTOK. Welcome back to Oklahoma Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move. We're here with Ron Shalhot talking about the Landlord-Tenant Act and talking about perspective from the landlord this week. And Becky, we're going into what does a landlord have to supply?
Or have to do.
Provide, I mean,
provide for the tenant. And there are laws for that. You can find that on the Oklahoma Real Estate Commission website. Be sure and do not go buy an old one. I mean, don't base your decisions on an old version because it changes. And there's one that's dated 2019. I think it was 11-2019. And there the specifics of what duties the landlord have are not so specific at all because everything's a little bit gray in the law, right? But basically, they have to, in the case of, say, a single-family residence, they have to make all the repairs and do what's ever necessary to put and to keep the tenant's dwelling unit in fit and habitable condition. Fit and habitable. Okay. Well, that's a little bit vague in itself, right?
That, yes, because, I mean, with my kids, what's fit and habitable doesn't always match.
Doesn't match your idea of
correct.
Fit and habitable.
Correct. That room is not fit and habitable.
Right. It's a hazard with all the – I always said I had $300 a yard carpet when in my kids' rooms growing up because if you picked up one square yard of anything on the floor, it probably cost $300, all
yeah.
the clothes and equipment
exactly.
and stuff like that. And they have to maintain in good and safe working order and condition all the electrical, plumbing, sanitary, heating, ventilating – air conditioning, and other facilities and appliances, including an elevator if you have one. So you have to keep those in working order. You can't say, whoop, well, you know, the fireplace, it's not necessary. You can just not use the fireplace if the damper doesn't work quite right, so I'm not fixing it. Can you do that, Ron?
Well, some of these get into a judgment call as to where is the fit or habitability, and where is the repair requirement. Consequently, if it is something that is available that is not in good working order, that really it should be inspected by the tenant before they move in and make sure that this is what they intend to rent and what they want. And if not, then they should have some kind of writing that says this needs to be repaired by a certain time or before you move in, and you know, have those kind of situations before you move in. If it though becomes damaged during the term of the tenancy, then you have to look at is this a facility or appliance that needs to be kept in good working order? Does this make it unfit for habitation and unfit for its use? So you sometimes will have a judgment call on these situations, and at times you do have some debate as to whether this was included or not. Generally, the law is going to side with the tenant if it is a situation where the tenant is exposed to a danger or things are not working as they ought to be working. On the other hand, the law will tend to shade in favor of the landlord if the tenant broke it or if it is a situation where it is not something that is dangerous or not something that affects habitability. For example, you don't like the color of the carpet. That's not a fit and habitability situation. So you do have to look at those kind of aspects. And there are other things that a landlord is required to do. You've got to keep there's common areas, which again, we're looking at something where you have multi-family residences or single-family residences, and if you're in a multi-family apartment complex, there are common areas. The landlord has to keep the common area clean and safe. Obviously, no one tenant is going to be out there cleaning the common areas. It's up to the landlord to do that. you've talked about the keeping the rental in a safe and habitable condition. Multifamily, you also have to provide trash receptacles for multifamily units, so you do have those kind of situations where the landlord does have to provide. Now, you mentioned you can get it from OREC. You can also go to the Oklahoma Bar Association website. There are places on that website where you can look under certain topics. You can find pamphlets that you can order, or you can read it online and print it off like I did, pamphlets on what are your rights as a landlord or what are your rights as a tenant. And it will not necessarily give you the complete statute, but it will give you the language that's in the statute in a question and answer format, so you can follow it a little easier than trying to look at Section 117 of Title 41 and try to figure that out. And, oh, then I've got to look at Section 118 and then 115, and how is that? And this gives it to you in a format situation. So there are ways to find it out. But, again, these are generalities.
Right.
And your lease cannot violate the Landlord-Tenant Act. Okay? Now, the tenant can be required to have other specific repairs if it's conspicuous and if it's agreed to in the rental agreement. But that has to be conspicuous in the rental agreement. Probably won't work on a multifamily, but a single-family residence, sometimes you'll have that where you exchange mowing for rent or something like that. And those are the kind of things that landlord and tenant can agree to, but you cannot violate the terms of the Landlord-Tenant Act. In other words, you can't have a lease which says, well, I don't have to keep the premises fit and habitable.
Well, you talked about common areas, and there are folks that live in apartment complexes. When the snow got to be, you know, a foot and a half deep in the parking lot, is the landlord responsible and must clear that parking lot?
Well, then you're going to get into a question of how much snow, when. Is it ice like we have in Oklahoma or snow? Is the clearing going to make it worse than it already is? So there are factors that can go into play.
Yeah, like if you scrape off all the snow and you have solid ice underneath,
exactly.
That's more dangerous than tromping on snow. So there's really no hard and fast rule.
It would be impossible to make a hard and fast rule simply because there are differing weather conditions that can affect what is the right thing to do. You do have now situations, and we see this in personal injury cases, where if the landlord moves something, moves the snow and ice, and that creates a hazard and somebody gets injured because of that, the landlord mm-hmm. could be responsible for that. But on the other hand, if it's a natural accumulation, the landlord would not have an injury responsibility if someone slips and falls on it because it's a natural accumulation of it. So you do have those kind of situations. And that those cases get to be also very difficult to litigate because you at times will look at whether the landlord affected something that caused that ice to accumulate right outside the tenant's door or somewhere along those lines. So you
like
do
maybe dumping a gutter spout right by the front door.
Right by the front door, that kind of thing, yeah. And where you're channeling a hazard that cannot be appreciated or seen ahead of time. So,
do you know when we built our office, the builder dumped the downspouts of this great big roof on the parking lot and the approach to the back door where employees come in? And I mean, since we are conscientious people, it cost a great deal of money, but we paid to tunnel under that big concrete parking lot to disperse that water into the gutter system that drained underground and went out to the street, as opposed to in the parking lot where it would create a sheet of ice under just the most minimal of conditions. So I'll tell you what, we've only got a minute left. Dean Riddell, Oh, okay. Well, a caller will after the break, because we've got to get on the other side of the break, and then we will answer the question. Call in if you want to, 840-1000. We're talking about the Landlord-Tenant Act, and we're talking about it from the landlord's perspective. What are the responsibilities of the landlord, and what can they expect from their tenant?
Right, and the two words on there, habitable and safety, comes into play. But we're going to be talking about what can a landlord allow or prohibit, including marijuana. That's a golden ticket right now. What do we deal with it? We'll be back with more with Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move, News Radio 1000, KTOK. Welcome back to Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move. This is Mark Carr, team member of the Becky Ivins Real Estate team, here with Becky Ivins and our attorney at law, Ron Shalott, talking about the Landlord-Tenant Act. And it's time for our word of the day, brought to you by Robbins Roofing, where their word every day is trust. You can trust Robbins Roofing from a small repair to a complete replacement. Give them a call at 728-3700. That's 728-3700. Ron, what's our word of the day?
Well, last week it was tenant. To remind you, it came from the French tenier, to hold. Someone who holds or possesses the land or property of another. Okay, tenant. So, Mark, what was our word of the day today?
You landlord.
Said landlord, your favorite word, landlord. Well, this one's pretty simple, so you can figure it out just from the word itself. It's, you know, two words put together. A landlord is an owner of land or real estate, one that especially has tenants on it. But it also can be the proprietor of an inn or lodging house. So an innkeeper is a synonymous term with landlord. But we think if we paid attention to history class in school, you know, the old feudal landlord idea that they had the own the land, but they didn't need to use all of it, and someone comes and says, hey, can I use part of that land, grow food, or have cattle on it? And the landlord would say, well, yes, but it's mine. And you can do that, but I get it all. However, you can keep some of it, or I will give some of it to you back for subsistence. And so consequently, you had that idea of a tenant who is, you know, farming or taking care of land or cattle for the landlord, the master of the land, and they would then benefit from that. Fast forward today, in an apartment complex or a house, you're probably not going to be growing food for anybody or have cattle, but you would be paying rent instead of paying it in produce or in sheep or cows or horses, whatever. You're going to be paying it in those things called dollars, whether it's cash. It used to be cash. Now it can be a check or direct deposit or credit card. There's a whole number of ways that we now barter. And so landlord is that owner of the land.
Okay. Our word of the day brought to you by Robbins Roofing.
Landlord. I love it. No French.
None at all. No.
Yeah, with that. Now, we were talking about what does a landlord have to supply? What do they have to provide?
Well,
one of the questions we had.
A caller.
The caller calling and couldn't hold on over the break was, is air conditioning. Does air conditioning have to be provided?
Okay, well, let's back up a little bit and make it more simplistic. At the beginning of the lease, the landlord is to provide full possession of the premises to the tenant. I mean, sometimes we forget that, oh, yeah, I rented this place. I should get it, and I should get possession of it. And then the landlord should give them quiet and peaceable enjoyment of the premises. They're renting it. This is where they're going to be living. This is their private sanctuary, and their private stuff's going to be in it. And so the landlord is not allowed to just willy-nilly walk in at any time while you're, you know, watching TV or eating dinner or whatever you're doing there and just barge right in and do what they want. I mean, just because they're landlord, they have licensed the place to you to have privacy while you are there. A landlord could enter in the event of an emergency or with a day's notice make an inspection or even a repair because they have to keep it in fit and habitable condition. So the landlord does have some responsibilities in addition to some rights. They get the right to have it kept up. The tenant can't just destroy the place. They're supposed to treat it fairly and appropriately and not destroy anything, as well as they have the right to have the tenant pay for damages or have the right to have the tenant pay rent, which sometimes tenants forget to do or unable to do. We've had COVID situation where some people have just unable to pay rent, and we might get into that about the situations there that people can look at to help them. That is a very difficult situation. But the landlord has put out the money and the obligation for the place, has a responsibility, so they should have a right to be compensated for what they are doing. They're providing the service. However, the landlord does have some obligations in addition to delivering full possession, as we said, to keep the common areas and grounds in good, safe, and sanitary condition, make repairs needed to keep it in a fit and habitable condition, keep facilities and appliances in good working order, and that includes the facilities, the electrical, plumbing, sanitary, et cetera, that Becky read off for us. But you also have to keep the air conditioning in a good and working order, if it's there. But there are places that there's not air conditioning, and if you're renting it, you would know that going into it, that there is not air conditioning.
If you have air conditioning, you have to keep it up.
You have to keep it up.
You don't have to keep it up 30 minutes after a tenant notifies you that it's broken. I sometimes have demanding tenants.
Well, let me give you a very extreme example. And
okay.
You'll never see it in Oklahoma City, I don't think. But you know, what if you were renting a place and it did not have indoor plumbing?
Mm.
Now, there's a good question for you. Do you have to have indoor plumbing if you fully rent the place not having that? It's a really good
question
because you go into it and you're paying for a place that doesn't have that kind of amenity. I was reading an article the other day about, and this is actually a hotel situation in an Asian country. I think it was $14 a night hotel, but wow. It was basically just a little cubicle. It was smaller than even a travel trailer. That's you barely fit it, and it had almost no amenities other than a pillow and a blanket and a mattress. So you do have those kind of situations, but if you're only paying $14 a night, I mean, that what do you expect to get? So,
well, but in Oklahoma, that would probably almost be a hotel type thing as opposed
right.
to maybe a place
oh, yeah.
to stay to live.
But there are people that do live in
hotels.
Well, or in trailers. There are converted trailers that people are renting now, mainly because the economic situation. The landlord also has to install and have a smoke detector or detectors that satisfy the state fire marshal, provide trash receptacles and removal where you have a multifamily unit, so you do have that. So you do have things. Metered, if you have a separate metered utility connection, then the tenant could be required to pay for it. Otherwise, if it's a common meter system, you have to provide then the running water and reasonable amounts of hot water at all times. So those are things that are required where you have a multifamily unit.
So I read this a little bit differently. The Landlord-Tenant Act states that except for This is the problem right here, except for a single-family residence where they have separate utilities.
Right.
You have to provide them with a supply of running water, reasonable amounts of hot water, and at all times, hot water and reasonable heat.
Right.
How about single-family residence?
Single-family residence would have a separate meter.
But if the water pipes break,
here's the thing: is that you're looking at the difference between multifamily and single family. Multifamily, you're not going to be allowed to say, "Well, we think Becky, you use way more water than Mark does in his facility. Therefore, Becky, we're going to charge you extra for that, or we're just not going to provide you." With water, or brought it to Mark, or not provide you with hot water, or provide it to Mark because you use up too much. So that's a different situation than if you have a single family residence where the single family residence would have a separate connection. Sometimes you'll find that utilities are included in the rent. Sometimes that you'll find that utilities are not included in the rent. I've been in apartment complexes where they provided free electric and air conditioning. But I've also been in apartment complexes where you paid for the air conditioning, electric, because you're separate metered, and you paid that in addition to rent. So it depends upon the situation and depends upon what you're looking at in terms of the rental unit. If it's all utilities provided on a single family, that would include then your water, your heat, your hot water, things of that nature. You could not get away with saying, well, I provided water, you can heat it up on the stove. You can't get away with that kind of a situation. So
that part does not really address whether or not you have to provide these things if they're break. It says you have to keep them in good working condition or something similar to that.
But what it's talking about there is about who, if you have a multifamily unit as opposed to a single family unit, and where's the responsibility for that? So you have to really look at the preference of that particular language. And that's why when you read the Act, you have to be careful and read each provision of the Act, but then understand too, just like you're pointing out, well, what about this or what about that, and where does that fall? And sometimes it's clear and sometimes it's not as clear as we would like it to be.
So I'm taking it to mean that if the facility has air conditioning, you rent it with air conditioning, you have to keep the air conditioning in working condition. However, if it does not have air conditioning, you have no requirement under the Landlord-Tenant Act to install air conditioning.
But you can get into a fit and habitability condition. However, what you have to remember, too, is that a tenant walking into this will know whether there's air conditioning going into or not. If you are renting and you're paying for air conditioning, it's got to be there and it's got to be working. If you are renting, go, I don't care if I got air conditioning, I've lived in worse, then you're not paying for that. You're not renting. You're not paying the rental amount for that. So consequently, you can't rent at a lower amount and then go demand it.
You know, I know it's time for break, but I had a triplex over by OCU a few years ago, and they didn't have central heating and air conditioning. They had like a wall furnace, and then I bought window units to put in there, and I got tired of buying window units because people that were hot came and got them to put them in their own units. I had a tenant sitting on her couch in the living room, and this great big guy from the apartment across the street walked in and said, "I'm hot. I'm taking the air conditioner." He takes it and off he goes. So am I required at that point to buy her a new air conditioner? Probably so.
When we come back on Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move, we'll be talking about, can a landlord prohibit someone from smoking in the facility and prohibit what they smoke? when we come back on News Radio 1000 KTOK. Welcome back to Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move. We're talking with Ron Shalhoub about the Landlord-Tenant Act. All right, Ron, we're at kind of our final part. We have a little we need to do some rapid-fire things that people need to know.
Well, as a landlord, you can require a security deposit. There are restrictions on limitations. You got to keep it in a separate federally insured account with the state of Oklahoma. There's a refund provision or what it can be used for. Those are in the Landlord-Tenant Act. You just need to be aware of that if you're a landlord, what your requirements are with regard to that. If there are defects in the premises which affect health and safety, the tenant can give you written notice. You do have a time limit to repair them. Sometimes the tenant can have them repair if they're $100 or less, but at other times the tenant can then terminate the lease if need be, so you do have those kind of situations. So you have to really look at this as a fairness issue, but the law does have requirements in terms of repairs. A landlord can adopt rules and regulations for the convenience of all tenants, but they have to be applied to all tenants fairly and not attempt to evade the obligations under the Landlord-Tenant Act. You should, of course, have everything in writing and put it out for people to see it, try to go over it with them. We do have situations and contracts now where people were just thrown a contract, signed it, and didn't read it. And courts used to say, you're deemed to have read it. Now they're a little bit more lenient on it. So if you're a landlord, I would go over the important provisions with the tenant. There are certain things about the notice requirement. If the tenant doesn't comply, that you do have to do in terms of being a landlord and give them notice. If you have a policy such as no satellite dishes, you want to put that into the lease, make it conspicuous, pet restrictions, guest restrictions, things of that nature. Smoking policy, which is what Mark was questioning about. You can have a no smoking policy in it, and if you have a no smoking policy, that includes any kind of smoking and can include vaping. It can include use of cannabis, even if a person has a license. If you have a no smoking policy, however, you can't forbid people taking medication. And that's where we get into an issue, because federal law still makes marijuana use illegal while state law allows it with a license. If you have a federal loan on the property, there could be a little bit different situation. However, that may change here pretty soon. Congress is looking at that. But you have to remember, too, you can't keep someone from taking their blood pressure medication or any other kind of medication. So if they have to use marijuana for a particular health condition and they have a license to use it, you can't forbid them from using it, but you can prevent them from smoking it, because that affects the air and the environment. So you can have some limitations on that.
There's other modes of delivery. So have you never had a brownie, Mark?
Well, Becky, have you ever had a brownie?
I will have to say not.
This
with
show
the,
just took a turn, and I love
know.
It.
Oh, yes. I know. Well, not with the marijuana in it, but I will tell you, I'm tempted now. Well, we've got less than a minute to go. Let's answer the question real quick about the air conditioner. If it is in need of repair and it's taking up too much electricity, the bill goes sky high. Can you demand that the it be upgraded or fixed to not use so much electricity?
Well, that's really going to be two different questions as to, upgrade versus a situation where you're looking at repairing something that's broke.
Right.
If it's got to repair it, you can force them to repair it, give them notice. There's ways to do it.
Okay. But if it's providing cold air, I think you're barking up a wrong tree maybe.